John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is that time of the week. It is the best Tuesday I've had all weekend. It is time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Who's in studio with me today, I wonder?
I don't know. Some raggedy guy that needs a haircut.
Yes, that's usually true.
Yeah.
So, Matt, welcome to the show,
of course. Yep, that's me.
It's funny, we were prepping for today's show.
We put so much effort into it.
Well, surprisingly, we're all over the board. We actually have had a ton of conversation that's probably all relevant today. Mm. And we may have stumbled upon the common thread of it by accident at like literally
the 11th hour
inception music of the show.
Yeah.
Or just before, as I say to Matt, you know, I'm looking at everything that I see here and they're all tax strategies.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what about, oh my gosh, they are. And what was the thing is, like, what are strategies for wealth? And you know, it's the True Wealth Show.
Right.
And we talk about the fact that, look, okay, wealth is sometimes, it can be a misleading term or an ambiguous term because it's subjective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we call it true wealth? Because memories and relationships are ultimately what's going to matter. You have all the money in the world, but nobody share it with, no friends. You're pretty lonely and the money doesn't mean much, okay? You have no money and great relationships. It's, you know, it's the resources strained,
mm-hmm.
but there's hope, okay? The key is really when you're trying to optimize here, I think that there's probably two things. Well, there's three things if you want to get this right. And the third one is just going to, everybody's going to be like, oh. But, and then some of you are going to be like, exactly. Right? So it's going to be the polarizing one. One, you need quality relationships. Two, you need adequate resources.
Mm-hmm.
Three, you need faith.
Yeah.
That's the groaner. I'll explain why to each.
Okay.
The relationships, because life's pretty lonely and meaningless without folks to share it with.
True.
Climb the highest mountain and have nobody to tell the story to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two, life is very difficult without resources. Notice I use the term adequate. Adequate is subjective, but it's subjective to you. What is it that you need? Okay. And want can, you know, expand, but there's a minimum sort of need. There's a want, and then there's excess, right? And there is a point of excess for everybody. And many people are like, well, I haven't got there yet. Like, I get it. But nevertheless, there is a threshold. You talk to folks that have extravagant resources. That's not the source of their happiness.
No.
And many aren't happy, in fact. Many are really stressful, which is why the last one matters so much, faith. Okay?
Mm.
Why faith? I believe that we are all built with a piece that's missing,
mm-hmm.
and many people try to fill it by throwing resources at it,
yeah.
or hiding it in experiences, or chasing something else, and it's a mirage on the horizon forever. And you just can't fill it. And I think it's because the faith component is the piece that's missing. And without that, the circle never gets completed.
Right. Those are three real pillars.
Yeah. And there's just no escaping it. It's just on financial programs. People are like, really? Like, I thought we were going to talk about how to build wealth. Like, we will. We will. I'm just going to tell you that you build all the wealth in the world and it won't build you happiness.
I think that's a good thing to preface this with. It's like, hey, we're going to talk about some different strategies and things, but if your life is in shambles behind the scenes because, you know, you don't have those three things going for you, it's like, well, maybe it was all vanity in the end.
Yeah, that is probably a huge one. I have been very reticent to kind of put this out there on the radio because I don't know, I just have. I think because this is not evangelistic. That is not the point of this program, right?
Right.
It's to teach.
Yeah.
Okay. But at the same time, I don't know how to hide from the fact that the core mission of what I find myself drawn to helping people with is better understanding the concept of stewardship, which is management of all the resources. That's where the concept of true wealth came from, is this total resource management. So it's the time, it's the utility, it's the relationships, all of those things that, it's the talents, right? Tools, talents, time, relationships, all of those are things that are part of your life, and we're responsible for managing them to the best that we can.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really is the core concept of stewardship. And then what are the principles that guide us along the way? And, you know, it's tough because culturally, when you don't teach these things, it's easy to see folks just sort of chase off on their own and do what the world convinces them to do.
Right.
Right. I mean, how many people believe that you need something because an advertisement created a belief in your mind?
Right.
You don't need that thing at all. But mm-hmm. somebody suggested that you do. Somehow it's entered into your psyche, and now you just can't live without it. And more importantly, if you don't get it, people will judge you for not having it.
That's the biggest one, is everyone chases an image anymore. And it's largely because of social media and all the other things that are pressuring you into wanting to buy something or live a certain lifestyle.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, is that actually going to make you happy?
Right. Well,
or is it going to bring you joy? Yeah.
Right. Because how many people show snapshots of their life, a curated image of their life designed to imply one life, but behind the scenes, it's nothing like what their life is?
Exactly.
Right. It's this desperate need for attention and validation of others. And then behind the scenes, really a very oftentimes hollow existence. I think there's some people that genuinely post high times, but how many people are posting because they're seeking validation from others?
Yeah.
I need to be confirmed to have value.
Mm-hmm. And if you're seeking it from man, from like people you don't know, it's like that's
kind of
actually sad when you really get to it.
Yeah. Well, it drives so much of our decisions. And, mm-hmm. I realize we're delving way into the philosophical here in this segment of the show.
No, but I think it's worth noting because, one of the things I did was I deleted Facebook off my phone, Instagram off of my phone, all of the social media stuff, blocked it. So that I can't even access it, right? It's like, I don't want to even touch that because when you spend all of your time looking at all the other things that people are doing in their life, you start to question, well, what am I doing in my own?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have a vision that's inside of the walls of your house, I think, really. Like, look at your family. What's important there? What is important with the time that you have at home and with the people that actually matter to you? And then refocusing that and saying, hey, what's important to me? And when you do that, it really is life-changing in a big way because you start to reprioritize things. And I think that's really where a lot of people get off base, is their priority set isn't where it should be. And it's not necessarily because, and I'm not saying they're a bad person or whatever, but I'm just saying they've been blinded by what society's trying to sell. And we even get blindsided by politics, right? Like, everyone wants to just spend all this time focusing on who's the president, what are they doing, and what's going on in Washington, D.C. And it's like, well, that's fine and dandy to care about, but what's going on in your home or in your own community?
Right.
Because you can't change D.C. realistically, but you can change your home, you can change your relationships, and that's the really important piece.
I agree. I think that to a certain extent, folks seek some tribal identity. We've had these sort of, some language that's common in the culture these days, the idea of who's your tribe or who's your circle of people.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard the concept, the sphere of influence, right? I want to add to something you said, because I want to be careful about it, just to clarify for everybody listening. Vision is not bad, right? When you started, Matt, you said, hey, I think people's vision is too big. And I would say, but then you followed up saying, but the priority set should be at home. And I like to differentiate those two personally because I think the vision's really important. The concept of casting a vision and saying, like, in order to have a financial strategy, right? Well, where are you going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're building out, okay, I have an intended destination. That's my vision.
Yeah.
And then I start putting in place the steps to get there, and that's the plan. But the priorities, what motivates me to want that vision in the first place?
Yeah.
I think that's what you're sort of alluding to, is
mm-hmm.
folks get their priorities all out of whack.
Absolutely.
It's like I'm trying to show off for other people, and mm-hmm. I'm overlooking the relationships that are close to
That's
me.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yep.
And so I really believe that that is something that culturally we are suffering with. And I do think suffering is the right term. It's great because here we are at the beginning of, you know, we're after Thanksgiving. And so what is it now? It's the holiday season, right?
Yep.
And for a lot of folks, the Christmas season. And why do I say that? Because look around. I mean, what do you see? Trees and lights and Santas and crosses and all those things. Okay, I realize it's very commercial, but that was the fundamental root of that. And we don't have to ignore that. Okay. And the beauty of where we're at these days is cancel culture is sort of dying off.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could just say some things. It doesn't make them untrue and it doesn't make them offensive to say, well, sure, there are other holidays besides Christmas. There are, right? But a lot of the foundation of this season was built around that. So, okay, let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
But the season tends to be so commercialized. And what does that do? It puts so much pressure on people to turn this into a commercial holiday. And where does that pressure come from?
From the advertisements.
Yeah. It's from all the things like, because somehow the stuff will make me happy. It won't.
Mm-mm.
Right? If you're, again, you have nothing, you're struggling to meet the basics, that's a different conversation. But the game of more is impossible to win.
Right. And when you get yourself so loaded into debt that, you know, you can't see out the other side, here we are back in the same situation we just talked about.
Yeah. So I think the idea of let's put in place the right foundation for conversation. And yeah, we're kind of leaning into it today. We're not going to avoid the concept or the discussion about finance today. That's what the show's ultimately about. So we're going to cover that. But yeah, let's get the context right. Separate the wants from the needs. Understand what's motivating here.
Yeah.
And understand that, you know, chasing validation through stuff or through financial achievement, that's not the pathway to enlightenment. Okay. So instead, we'll talk about like what are the reasons that you want to be doing this, and then what are the methods. And again, when we started the show, it was a lot of it's going to be around tax.
Yeah,
great time of year to talk about it. So we will. We're going to let's talk about
tax.
Some of the themes of tax.
Yeah.
Some of the strategies of building wealth, but also in the context of why.
I'm excited for what we got.
Yeah, but it's time for our first break. So why don't we jump on board with that one? When we come back, again, that theme of all kinds of strategies to, like, why do you even care about tax? Well, you maybe don't, but maybe you do. And December's the month to think about it. All right?
I like it.
All right. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Your host, Dave Littlejohn, in studio today with me.
Matt Dixon.
Remember that you can get caught up. We podcast these things, so it should be posted tomorrow. You can go to 541radio.com here at the station. You can also go to our website at littlejohnfs.com, and under the Educate tab, you'll find past shows and a lot of information. It's also where you can reach out if you have personal questions that don't get covered on the show. We do actually serve as financial professionals for a number of folks, and there is no obligation to call and get questions answered. So that's part of what we try to do is help folks out. And then, you know, if you were looking for somebody that may be able to help serve as your planner or as a financial partner, investment manager, that is something that we are certainly welcome to speak with you about. And we can talk about that, too. But today, we're talking about first that foundation of true wealth, and where I think we're just kind of reconfirming why we believe what we believe in the show,
mm-hmm.
right? And then we want to talk about, you know, what are some of the strategies. So last segment it was all about the idea that money's not where the happiness is going to come from, right? There's three pillars, right? So it's resources, it's relationships, and ultimately there's going to be a faith component.
Yeah. Okay?
And the faith, because none of this stuff has meaning on its own, right? It's just going to end up ringing hollow, Okay. So you can't really ignore that. And if you disagree, that's okay. We're not, like I said, we're not here to evangelize to you, but it's okay that you know where our position comes from. Okay. So, Matt.
Yeah.
When we started the show, we didn't really necessarily start with that as our intro. We talked about, well, what are strategies for wealth building?
Right.
And specifically today, we you know, sometimes we talk to folks generically, like, hey, you're just getting started. How do you build wealth? But for some folks, it's like, hey, you've had a lifetime of accumulation and you're trying to either maintain or grow wealth, and you've reached a threshold of higher net worth.
Mm-hmm.
First off, can we kind of rough out what is the definition of high net worth?
No, that's a great question. I don't know that it has a definite.
I know, right? It's subjective.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's kind of a
well. What's a mass crazy affluent, is you know,
and then there's sort of a threshold of higher net worth.
Yeah. I just think back to like 10 years ago, and everyone was like, "Well, you know, that threshold is $1 million, right? Like, if you can have $1 million, that's high net worth." But I feel like that bar has really changed with inflation, right? Like,
it has. I think it's still if you have liquid investments of $1 million. You're probably creeping into the higher net worth category.
Sure.
I think if you are still building to that, you know, once you've probably crossed about $250,000 in liquid investments, you are finding your way into the mass affluent marketplace, right? That's
okay.
$250,000 to $1 million-ish. Again, these are subjective. Right. It's just to give you a ballpark of where you're at. That doesn't mean like if you've got $700,000 that you're doing poorly.
Yeah,
that's cause none of these. The numbers are all contextual, right?
Oh yeah, because I mean, a lot of it depends on your lifestyle. Because if you're over here spending $30,000 a month on your, you know, your fancy wines and your trips to Bali, and you have $700,000, I'm gonna be like,
ain't happening. Yeah,
you're not
fast.
Yeah, but if all you like to do is garden and spend time with your grandkids, $700,000 is probably more than sufficient.
Right,
you know?
And it also has to do. But here's the crazy thing, right? Hey, you spend $30,000 a month on all of your lifestyle expenses, but you've got pensions that pay you $40,000 a month.
Yeah.
Great. You know, you got an income that's coming in that's going to cover your expenses and then some.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still essentially financially covered. So you may not have a significant nest egg, but you have resources that are accommodating your lifestyle.
Exactly. Okay?
And so lifestyle is on a spectrum, right? Some people need or want more and some people require a lot less.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, these are subjective terms, but yeah, when you start approaching $1 million, most of the time we start saying you're kind of reaching the high net worth. And then I think where there's two other categories. So you have high net worth, I will say sort of very high net worth, and then we'll just call it ultra high net worth. And then after that, we'll just say elite.
Okay.
And elite is, that's probably a terrible term, right? Let's just say really, really, really high net worth or like ridiculously high net worth.
Yeah.
Okay. So where would you subjectively throw these? If we're at high net worth hits at about $1 million, mass affluent is, you know, from 250,000 up to there, $1 million to where is kind of high net worth?
I would say around that $2 to $3 million mark.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's probably reasonable. $2 to $3 million. And we're talking about liquid investments. We're not
right.
talking about,
yeah,
if you're talking property and stuff like that, but it's not liquid or you're
right.
still making payments.
And the reason I'm coming up with these numbers is once you start to even get into that like $10 million range, things get really exotic, right? Because you could have a hard time running out of money. Like if you're invested in even getting like
you can just buy expensive stuff
sure.
to run out of money.
Right. But at a certain point, you would expect that, you know, you're either probably, you know, going to die with about the same amount of money that you had when you started. Because, I mean, $10 million, if you're getting a 5% return on that a year.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have
$500,000 a year.
Yeah, you're going to have a hard time probably spending that. Maybe you don't. But for most people, I feel like, you know, you get a 5% return. $500,000 a year is probably plenty for you to live on.
I think we should table that concept.
Oh, okay.
Because I love that you brought it up. I want to come back to it. So kind of remind me about that.
Okay.
About, hey, you know, we wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, can you run out of money when you got $10 million?
Right.
Okay. So I like your definition. We said like if your high net worth, if you have a liquid net worth over
$1 million. $1 to $2 or $3 million.
And I think you start getting into the very high net worth. If you've still got that liquid net worth of $1 million or more, and your total net worth, including illiquid stuff, starts to hit that $3 million-ish range.
Yeah.
I think you get into very high net worth if you're above, or what did we just say? High net worth is up to, then you get very high net worth. Yeah, maybe even up to as much as $5 million.
Yeah.
Right? Then you start to go into a category from about $5 million to $10 or $15 million.
Yeah. That's
where you're really next level wealth compared to typical.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this fairly big gap. I think like from $10 million to like $30 million, there's actually people that reach that within lifetimes without having extraordinary business success or something like that. It's consistent, but they grow a solid business, they build out a portfolio of real estate, they have other stuff going on. But then you really start to gap when you start to see like from 30 to 100 million and then north of 100 million, you're just like, okay, you sold a really expensive business to private equity or something and leveraged your way out. Because everything above that is sort of just adding zeros to it.
Yeah.
Right? You have $100 million and you earn 5%. You have $5 million. Even after the government takes half of it, you got $2.5 million. And you're like, okay, so that's what? $200,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're going to spend $50,000 a week, right? So, and you're, what is that? I mean, how many thousands of dollars a day?
Yeah.
Right? You know, you're at like $7,000-$8,000 a day. And you go, I don't know what you're eating and drinking to get to those numbers and how many massages
but that
you get
is,
or how many times you hop on a private jet and fly somewhere. But like, there's a lot of money.
But it is some people's reality.
Well, this was the larger point is that you can just make things expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not flying on a Lear jet or a Citation or something. I'm flying on a Gulfstream. Okay. Yeah. Well, now you're flying on a $100 million airplane instead of a $15 million airplane. And the cost per hour when you start looking at that is, oh, well, it's $15,000 an hour in the air. And you're going to fly 6 hours. Like, oh, it's a $100,000 trip somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? And you can burn through money, but there's also people that are billionaires.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, billionaires usually not like $1 billion in the bank. It's the stuff that they own is worth $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of wild too. But so let's pretend that we're talking to the folks. I think this show today is the folks that are probably, in that you have at least $1 million liquid.
Yeah.
You may have net worth significantly higher than that. I mean, if you're listening to the show and you're like, well, I got $20, $30 million worth of stuff, you may have even more than that. But this stuff is, it takes on a different meaning at some point. Okay. But that million to 5 million spot, a lot of this stuff is going to be applicable for you today.
Okay? I like it.
Like a lot of stuff. And so I think what do you think, man? We got kind of a list. I think we kind of hammer through them quickly.
Sure.
And
then maybe you can kind of sprinkle in some other ones here.
Yeah, I mean, what we'll talk about is why they're relevant, and they're like bullet points. And so I'm looking at this, and I think we got about 15 points here that for our higher net worth folks. And again, high net worth doesn't mean that you're earning $1 million.
No, you just
have it.
It means
you saved up and you got it, right? But I want to talk to you about what this means. And it's going to mean different things for people different ages too.
Yeah.
Right? It's different when you're 50 than if you're 80.
True. Right? Yeah, age plays a huge portion.
It does, because the timing of why we do things. But so let's go through this. We're going to talk about some of the financial ideas for some of these higher net worth folks. And again, we're not going to be giving advice, but we're going to be talking about what and why,
mm-hmm.
and things you may want to talk to a financial advisor about. Okay, maybe us, maybe somebody else. But they're things that maybe you need to put on your radar.
Okay, let's talk about these.
All
things.
Right, we will, but notice the time.
Oh.
Yeah, we better take.
Stick around then.
The next break, and then when we come back, 15 strategies. We got to crank through these.
Okay.
So we can do it, right, Matt?
We can.
All right. Stick around, gang. It's going to get real. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4.
on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we are about to, so buckle up, right? We're about to cover ideas for specifically for higher net worth individuals. So these are folks, if you've got more than $1 million in liquid assets, we want to start talking about things that you can do here. And I'm going to do my best to go through this because, Matt, we've got a list.
Yep.
And how do you want to do this? You want to read them and then we'll just talk about why it matters and who it's applicable to?
Well, I'll let you start out with number one, and maybe I'll jump in here in a couple. How
okay.
about that?
Then we'll just kind of work our way back some four C's here.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to really dwell on these a long time because we got 15 or so to get through, and we don't have a ton of time. And this is not supposed to be advice like, go do this. It's supposed to be like, are you aware of these things? Ask your professional about it if you're not.
Perfect. I like that frame up.
Okay. So first is maximize tax-advantaged accounts. Okay. This is stuff like IRAs, Roth IRAs, health savings accounts, 401ks, any number of those things. And then there's even some tax strategies around those accounts, like whether or not you should convert accounts from traditional to Roth. The whole purpose is that you want accounts where you can bully your tax rate. I can put money in where I'm paying a lesser tax today to be or lesser tax in the future. So I'm willing to trade off. I'm in a high tax bracket now. I'll push the tax out to later. Maybe I'm in a low tax bracket today. So I pay it on purpose so that my future tax liability is lower. But it's trying to maximize tax utility using different mechanisms. Okay. There's a lot of different accounts. There's some different things that you need to know how to navigate. Not every account's available to every person, but the idea is if they're available to you, you should be using them to help control your tax rate better.
Yeah, one of the big ones is diversifying the like different types of investment accounts that you have, because I've seen it where someone walks in and they're like, okay, I've got $3 million or whatever in this traditional IRA, but that's really their only investment. And then they're like, I'd love to pull $500,000 out and go do this with it. And I'm like, okay, well, we only have one bucket to pull from, and if you pull that $500,000, that's $500,000 of income.
And
so it's
let me also just kind of add to that. I'm going to clarify. When you say diversify investment accounts, we're also talking strategies, right? You don't need to get five different IRAs at five different
places. No, I'm
saying
different types of accounts.
Yeah, you need to have different tax strategies because they give you different access points, right?
Exactly.
Tax deferred money becomes taxable income if you take it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Money that is already been taxed has a different tax rate that you may be able to access in the future. So they have different roles in the strategy. And the idea is to mix and match them to create the kind of utility that serves the plan that you need.
Exactly.
Okay. So I like it. Next, strategic Roth conversions. Okay. This one, I hear a lot of the time wholesale advice from talking heads on the radio or on the internet or on television that just say, oh, you should, you know, convert to Roth. Okay.
Like, maybe.
I think that's the correct answer.
Yeah.
Maybe. Why would you convert to Roth, Matt?
Well, if you're looking at where your taxes are at, you know, now versus where they're going to be in the future, maybe you're having a year where there's not a whole lot of income.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you convert a little bit and trigger a little bit more income for the year, you're still in a pretty low tax bracket. But if there's a ton of money, say, in a traditional IRA, maybe when RMDs come, required minimum distributions, mm-hmm. and they're forcing you to take money out of that IRA in the future, maybe you're going to be put into a higher tax bracket in the future. So it makes more sense to do it now.
Right. There are a couple things that really show up out there. If you have a particularly large 401k
yep.
or some kind of tax-deferred IRA, 457 plan, something like that, and particularly large can often be approaching or exceeding $1 million, one of the things that folks don't realize is that your required distributions may force you into a higher tax bracket.
Yes.
They'll make your Social Security potentially taxable, in at least in the current tax policy. They will make the income that comes out more taxable. And so you may intentionally convert some money, pay in your currently lower tax bracket, because Roth IRAs don't have required distributions.
Right.
Okay. So there can be reasons for that. And also it might be because you're never going to spend the money, but your tax bracket is lower than your heirs. Right. And most people, a lot of people don't know that if you inherit an IRA, you still got to pay the taxes at your current tax rate.
Right.
And there are limits to how long you can keep that in money in an IRA when you inherit it. You have about 10 years to get it out in most circumstances. So if you're not a spouse.
Yeah, right? And so if you're a high net worth earner and you inherit this thing and then, you know, you've got to get it out in 10 years, tack on all that extra money as income.
The tax rate higher.
Yeah, so heirs inheriting an IRA can be in real danger of being in a really high tax bracket.
Exactly.
Which actually leads us to
Number four.
Yeah.
Yep. Invest in tax-efficient assets. Talk to me, Matt.
Well, areas where you can get some tax-free growth, we kind of talked about that, the Roth concept. So we've already kind of touched on that. But there are different types of accounts that are taxed differently, right?
Sure.
And so long-term capital gains, if you're
cheaper than short-term.
Yep. Yeah, and most of the time cheaper than income taxes, too.
Pretty much every time.
Yeah, and so there are ways to use a brokerage account to potentially your advantage. So definitely, and notice we keep talking about what?
Different taxes. Types of accounts. It's all
loops back to taxes.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks don't think about this, but taxes are a significant impact on your investments. If you make a 10% return, but then have to pay 30% in taxes, you netted 7.
Yeah.
Right.
I just look at it like a leech, you know, if you have 1,000 leeches on you just sucking your blood, you know, versus.
I think about it like drag in an aircraft, right? If you have a really sleek aircraft, but you start putting barnacles on it, or maybe on a boat, right? A clean boat,
you
start getting barnacles built up. It's less efficient, right? It takes more effort to do to get to the same speed, right? It's less fuel efficient. And that's kind of how your money works, is we want it to be efficient. We can't eliminate all the drag, but if we can eliminate more of the drag, it improves how efficient things work. So taxes are drag, okay?
Yeah.
All right. So another is donor advice. So this is where we get into some interesting stuff. So like strategic gifting, okay?
Yeah.
When you give money away on purpose, okay? If you are charitably inclined, and it's interesting today being Giving Tuesday after Cyber Monday, right? So everybody's talking about it. That's just coincidence today. But strategically giving money away, because if you're going to give it away anyhow, you may accelerate a gift in a particular year through the use of something like a donor-advised fund. Okay, if you're unfamiliar with this, we're not going to go into great depth today, but I mean, contact our firm and we can talk about it. A donor-advised fund is a way to advance charitable gifts now, put them into a fund, and then you can make those distributions over time. So you don't have to make a huge gift all at once, but you can accelerate a gift into a donor-advised fund, take the tax break in the year that you do it, and then that donor-advised fund can be used to distribute over time. So think about like creating like a miniature endowment or something like that. You could do something like that with a donor-advised fund.
I actually think that's one area that's really, really undervalued and overlooked in planning.
Yeah.
It's like, if they're, like you just said, if they're going to get it eventually,
here's an interesting one for I'm just going to talk specifically to the audience members that tithe, right? Perhaps you receive an inheritance and you're considering tithing on an inheritance or a windfall of some sort. It could be that a really large gift all at once would be more than your income. In a scenario, well, were you to do that, it may not necessarily benefit you to make the gift all at once because you wouldn't be able to write off future income. So you may want to break something like that up. In
Good
other
point.
Scenarios, you may want to take a big gift in a year of an extraordinary gain to lower your tax exposure and then distribute the gift over time. So, you know, maybe you plunk everything in and then you want to use that as your tithe over the next year or two or three, you would be more tax beneficial to do it that way.
Gifting when the markets are high or there's, you know.
Just different reasons depending on how money's passing through your life. This is what you talk to planners about, by the way. This is why we can't give you specific advice on air about this. So another one's real estate. Okay, real estate's an interesting one because you get the benefit of depreciation as well as income. And so that creates some different tax advantages to real estate. And those tax advantages could be extended from property to property if you sell one and move into another through something like a 1031 exchange.
Yep, deferring. Okay?
Yeah, and interestingly enough, in the future, keep listening because not on this episode, but we're going to probably be talking about some really interesting strategies around 1031 that will also be relevant for those of you that have maybe not liquid stuff, but highly appreciated property that you're trying to figure out, how might I get rid of this highly appreciated property without triggering a giant capital gain all at once, right? Yes. I'd like to liquidate this. I don't want to be in charge of managing it anymore, but I don't want to pay the taxes. Now what? We have a solution that's kind of interesting. See me after class, right? If you're curious, call 541-375-0898. We can discuss it, but it's more. We're not going to cover it on today's show.
Perfect. Okay?
So yeah. there's their total cliffhanger, right?
Yeah.
What else we got here?
Well, one of them was creating that legacy plan, but that's basically a fancy way of saying, you know, Roth IRAs can be passed tax-free to heirs.
Yeah.
And so, and I think we already kind of talked about
that. We kind of did earlier on the Roth conversion. And again, it's bullying tax rates. And now you're bullying tax rates into the next generation.
And there we get into that generational wealth piece.
Generational wealth stuff.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's kind of an interesting one. Generational wealth. Some people, it you know, makes their skin crawl. Other people are like, yeah, I want to leave a bunch of my kids. So let's talk a little bit about what that can look like. But I'm looking at the clock here. Okay. If we do this, we're at about number 7 out of 15.
We're halfway through.
If we take our break now, we'll come back and we'll be able to finish the home stretch on him. So we're
going
to do that. Stick around, gang. 8 more tips for wealth building for higher net worth individuals. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show, where Matt and I are covering strategies. This time around, it's for higher net worth individuals. Again, we're talking specifically, again, if you don't have this yet, you may know people that do that you're, or you may, maybe you're going to inherit from people that have this.
There you go.
These are all relevant things. If not, it can be aspirational things that you want to find your way towards. So we're not talking about things that aren't going to be useful to you, because everybody that listens to us is of course brilliant and can get on track financially.
David, number 8. It's talking about insurance-based strategies. You always do a good job when talking about this. I'm going to let you run away with it.
Okay. Well, insurance, first of all, most of the time we prefer to rent insurance rather than own it. But there are some scenarios where owning insurance makes sense.
Okay. Can you talk about this briefly?
Yeah, I will. So first of all, renting insurance is like term. Okay, term insurance, hey, if somebody's counting on me and my money and I die, then they need a pot of gold in order to replace me, okay? That's the basics. But permanent insurance is a little different. The idea is insurance offers some unique tax elements at play, okay? So one of the unique elements is that if it's paid for with after-tax money, the benefit is typically tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when properly structured, and structured means how it's purchased, the entity that owns it, and what's placed, and so forth, it can be very useful for estate planning. Because remember, one of the things that we want to do is bully our tax rate. Okay.
Yep.
So if the idea is to get future taxes at a lower rate than present, we may make some sacrifices today for improved benefit tomorrow. Insurance is a great scenario for that. It's also particularly useful if you have a lot of illiquid things that you own. This is stuff like property. And if you are going to die with real estate, your heirs may owe taxes on that as part of an estate tax. And if there's not enough cash in your estate to pay for that tax, they'd be forced to sell or otherwise get financing in order to pay the taxes to hold on to those assets. Insurance can be a great way to create cash to pay for estate taxes. Okay?
There's the
good
option.
Really interesting strategies around that. And there can even be times where it's valuable to consider insurance when you're trying to maximize things like pensions. Okay, maybe it's a his and hers scenario,
a safeguard in case someone passes and then that pension's gone or
right.
something.
Right, well, it's the idea of, do we take a lesser payout of a joint life period certain or something like that, or do we maximize by saying highest value is the single life option on an annuitization, but we use some of that to pay insurance premiums so that if something happens, that other person is refunded via insurance rather than a lower annuitized payout. Okay, so those are rationales for why it might be useful. Okay, so anyway, it gets into more advanced planning. But yeah. I don't think we should overlook it. So if that's something that you're curious about, again, see us after class. Other stuff to consider, Matt, this whole alternative assets thing. Talk to me for a second about why alternative assets seem to be overlooked so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
First, what are the alternative assets? Or what are some of them?
There's so many ways that you can get into these, and there's so many different things that they do. Like, for example, you might have an alternative investment where you're getting into real estate, where you're not actually the direct owner of the real estate, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're not controlling it, you're not re-roofing and painting, but you're in a partnership where you kind of own those assets with a group of other people.
Right. So through a trust or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're getting the appreciation a little bit, potentially, of the property, or maybe you're not. Maybe you're just getting into something where it's a pure income play. But you're able to get access to asset classes that aren't just bonds and equities. So you're not just playing with the stock market. You're getting into something that is outside of that scope and is paying you some interest.
Right. And there's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's private equity, hedge funds. Yep. A lot of folks don't realize you can buy actual physical property, physical real estate in retirement plans, for example. Mm-hmm. Like your IRA, you can go buy real estate. There are rules, right? You want to be right. careful. You don't want to mess it up. But it is doable if that is of interest to you. So
right.
Just be aware that there are other pathways besides the straightforward vanilla stuff that we hear about so often.
Good one.
Here's one that I think gets overlooked a lot by folks. The idea of strategic or intentional gifting
oh,
and creating
yeah.
trusts.
Yep.
Right? Trusts, we've talked about on the show a lot. In the simplest terms, a trust is a way to mitigate or otherwise avoid probate in an estate. Probate's like if you die without you have to go to court to have somebody sign away documents that have title. Right. Like you can't sign your name because you did. So yeah. a trust can mitigate some of that. But the strategic gifting. Right. Like, mm-hmm. hey, you can either pay taxes on this when you die or you can give it to somebody right now and they get the immediate benefit and maybe sidestep those taxes altogether.
Good point. Right? Yeah.
And sometimes it's not a good idea. Sometimes it is. There's some planning elements to it. But folks
right.
forget what you mentioned this earlier, Matt, like. Where does folks get this idea that they can only gift, like the $15,000 to $17,000 annual limits?
I know. It's just a big misconception. You can,
you can gift a lot. You can
yeah,
gift
federally,
millions of dollars.
Yeah, federally, it's millions, right? And
right.
so,
and it doesn't cost taxes to the person that gets the gift either.
You look at a state like Oregon, right, where if you have a trust and it's structured properly, talking about that kind of $2 million threshold, if you have
everything
over,
above $2 million
becomes a taxable event.
Yeah.
when you die. So it's like, well, maybe if especially if your heirs plan to keep something and not sell it,
right?
Maybe it makes sense to gift it early so they can get some use out of it.
Right.
And it lowers your total estate.
This, by the way, is where you can get really clever with things like, well, maybe you give it away or maybe you don't, but maybe you use life insurance and then you can get a step up basis on one side, get a cash refund on the other, cover some tax. So again, it's all about what's the most
efficient
way to do it.
This is why we hire financial
planners,
professionals. Yeah.
Not just not investment jocks and not as product specific player. You hire a planner,
mm-hmm.
right, for this kind of thing, or and tax pros. That's what they're for.
Tax loss harvesting. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, this simply
means
that sometimes
one.
You sell stuff that's at a loss on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people
tax
have
losses.
A hard one with that.
Yeah,
they're
it's
like,
a hard one.
We can't sell it until it goes back up.
I know. it's gone down. Let's go ahead and capture the loss now. And we'll use that to offset something else, or we'll carry it forward to offset something in the future. But it's kind of a make lemonade out of lemons scenario,
mm-hmm.
right? Like nobody wants the losses, but if you have them, then there are ways to utilize them so that they help to balance out your tax obligations over time.
There you go.
Okay, optimizing required minimum distributions and withdrawals. Okay, it's another biggie. It involves,
yeah.
you're going to have to take money out at some point
well,
most of the time.
And how many times have you heard someone say, well, I can't touch my IRA because, I can't touch it. And
yeah.
it's like, well, you're going to have to at some point. So let's just face the inevitable.
Well, and it comes down to, again, the efficiency concept. It's kind of gross to talk about, but like we don't live forever.
Right.
There's a peak use where your time and utility and your ability to enjoy the money is going to diminish. And so you certainly don't want to run out of money, before you die, right?
Yeah.
But what you also don't want to do is get so focused on never touching something that you kind of create an unnecessary hardship in your own world by being clumsy about it. And you don't want to put yourself into a higher tax bracket because you were sort of negligent about doing some simple things that could have kept you in a lower and more efficient tax situation.
Exactly.
So, all right. What's left on the list?
Man, we basically got...
Yeah, we got... Sorry, you know, muni bonds, that's a simple one.
That's a possibility.
It sounds like a recommendation. I'm careful about that. They're just interesting because they're typically federal and state tax-free.
Yeah, but you got to look... You know, typically they don't pay as much as other bonds. Yeah, so you then you got a tax-efficient yield.
Tax-equivalent yield, all that.
That.
But finally, on the list, I would say review where your assets are. You kind of want to get a sense of what's tax-efficient and what isn't.
Yep.
Right. That's just an inventory thing. So everybody should kind of know where they're at. And having a tax strategy is probably good. And then the last one is flexibility, right? The reality is we're looking at a likely change in tax regime. The Trump administration has been pretty vocal about wanting to make radical changes. And so you have to build some flexibility and contingency into your strategy. What if it changes? Then what? Right. Yeah. So this stuff doesn't get locked into stone. That's one of my big objections, by the way, to people that want to set up things that are like, oh, sure, you're going to own this for the next 40 years.
Yeah.
Right. Really? I'm going to lock something in for permanent. What if tax policy changes? Then what?
Yeah. I know we're getting close to running out of time here. So
yeah,
I think
60
it's
60 seconds.
I think it's important that people understand, you know, we have this radio show, but this is a lot of the work that we actually do.
Yes.
Right. Like, don't forget that part. We're talking about it because this is what we do. We can.
Yeah. We literally do planning for folks and you get into the more advanced case design. And I always try to say, look, if you're not using us, talk to your person about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Please let it be an educational opportunity for you and talk to them. But if you don't have that person, that's also why we do this. So we're sharing with you that there is a more advanced planning strategies at your disposal, and it can make things more tax efficient. And notice none of this was about extracting more investment performance.
No.
Right?
Not
we didn't talk
one.
About any investment purchasing at all. We just said, just don't screw this thing up.
Everything came back to taxes.
Well, look, Matt, in the last few seconds, how do people find us if they need to?
Little John Financial. Go to the website, littlejohnfs.com, or give us a call, 541-375-0898.
All right. Well, we're out of time. So until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.